Welcome to part two of our conversation with Kevin Schmitz about being followed by the dead. What led you to dive deeper than into the paranormal after having those experiences and almost losing your life? I mean, what led you over to Dan and to getting more involved in that area and that interest of yours and that truly passion of yours as well?
Well, that goes back to the whole film thing. I had a friend that was working for a studio here. It was one of the bigger studios in Buffalo here. And they were doing a zombie film and they were looking for extras. And I'm just like, no, I want nothing to do with that whatsoever. Didn't interest me one bit. She's like, well, come on, you know, I've been to your shows. You play in front of hundreds of people and, you know, you have a personality. You'll be fine. And I'm just like, no, I'm not interested. So this went on for a little while, and then she called me up. She's like, look, they're doing another movie and they're casting for roles, and you should really try out for one of the roles. So she was the kind of friend that just hounded me and hounded me and hounded me, and finally I gave in. And I went and I auditioned for this movie, and I know I did terrible. I wasn't planning on getting the part. I was just going to chalk it up to a life experience. I could say, hey, you know, I auditioned for a movie. Mm-hmm. Well, I ended up getting a part in the movie and then fell in love with the filmmaking aspect of it. So I started becoming really active in the local film scene. Mm-hmm. A lot of productions would specifically call me because I had a good reputation and they wanted me to work on their films. And then I became involved with the Buffalo Film Commission here, which is the ones that handle all the big Hollywood movies that come here. So then I started getting jobs on Hollywood movies that came to town.
Yeah.
And I know Dan's going to listen to this and he's going to laugh because I have to bring it up because it has to do with the story.
Yeah.
But there's this ongoing joke between me and Dan and the Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
Because they filmed Ninja Turtles 2 here.
Okay.
And when I first met Dan, I was so excited that I worked on that. That's all I ever talked about. Because I got to work on the second unit, which was all the stunts.
Yeah.
You know, the blowing up of cars, you know, the helicopter stuff and stuff like that. So I was totally psyched. But we had a mutual friend that was part of his team at the time, the Greater Western New York Paranormal Society. And I had gotten her a job and she was on my crew. And to cut the story down a little bit, we had Sundays off. So she's like, well, we're going to be doing a ghost hunt. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. You know, I've never done a ghost hunt before. I'd like to do a ghost hunt. She's like, well, why don't you grab a couple guys from the crew and then come down to where we're doing the ghost hunt. And I'll set it up so you guys can come on. So they ended up filming the whole episode around us being part of the Ninja Turtles crew. And, but what they did is they went to our naval park here and mm-hmm. none of them really had a grasp on history and didn't really understand the way things worked on a ship from World War II. Mm-hmm. And I did, because anything to do with World War II is a trigger for me. And so, you know, I helped them out with some of the history on the show and stuff like that. And they knew that I did camera work and stuff. So about a week later, the team's leader, Cameron DuBoyne, he called me and he's like, hey, we want you to be part of the show. And I'm like, for what? And they're like, well, we want you to come on for the history part of it. And we also want you to, you know, obviously film because you have the camera experience. So, and he said, in return, we'll teach you how to ghost hunt. And I'm thinking, oh, all right, this is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to get to learn something new, you know. And so when I first met the team and I first met Dan was at the Naval Park. And he'll even, if you ask him now, I mean, we're the best of friends now. We get along great. But he'll tell you when he first met me, he thought I was kind of a pompous ass. And I kind of was. I mean, I kind of was bragging about everything that I did. And it wasn't more, I don't consider it bragging. I just considered I was just glad to be doing what I was doing. You know, I was
sure
over enthusiastic, I guess, about it. Mm-hmm. So the first investigation I did with Greater Western New York, we went to this place in Bedford, Pennsylvania called the Eagle Hotel, which happened to be part of a fort that was there in the 1700s that George Washington stayed at. And from the get-go, while we're driving there, the psychic for our team at the time is like, it feels like we're driving on death. And I'm just thinking to myself, okay, where's this going?
Yeah.
So we get to the location and the historian for the town is there and she's, you know, telling us the history of the town or whatever. And she's like, yeah, as the different nationalities came in and took over the fort, you know, they would dig up the cemetery, replace the bodies that were there with their bodies and, you know, this and that. And when they finally tore down the fort to establish the town, well, they didn't remove the bodies. They kind of just like plowed them down the main street and, you know, paved over them. So when the psychic said we were driving on bodies, she was absolutely correct.
Yeah.
So when we got in this place, it was just an amazing, amazing building. It was from the 1700s. You could tell that you were walking down the halls of history. I mean, just the way the building was laid out, the energy that was in the building. And there was this, there were claims of something really evil in the basement. And this is available on YouTube. If you look up under, Dan Klass's, Facebook, he has the old episodes of Behind the Shadows on there, and it's the Eagle Hotel and it's about 21 minutes in. I was down in the basement with another camera guy and two female investigators and I'm filming them. He's on one side of the room. I'm on the other side of the room. Now, I went into this investigation still kind of being a skeptic. You know, I kind of believed, but, you know, I was one of those people, well, if it doesn't happen to me, then it's not real type thing.
Sure.
We're down in the basement. We're filming these investigators. And the one investigator, you know, she's not really provoking, but she's like, you know, you could touch one of us and blah, 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 and that. And going back now and watching, I'm noticing that she's like, you know, swiping at her back, like something's touching her back. Mm-hmm. And I didn't put two and two together until recently when I went back and I watched the episode. All of a sudden you hear me say, oh my God, my back is burning. And the one investigator's like, are you being scratched? Now, how do I know if I'm being scratched? You know, it's my back. I can't see behind me. And I've never done this before. So I have no idea what's going on.
Sure.
So the other camera guy ran over, they lifted up my shirt and they've got this on camera, the scratch forming up my spine. And as it was forming, it was busting blood vessels up my spine. So they came over and they put the K2 meter over to my back and it spiked all the way to red. So now they're expecting me to like Scooby-Doo it out of the building. You know what I mean? Like not even touching the ground. And it wasn't like that for me. It all somehow just came together for me. And I just said, no, I want to know why this happened. I want to know why it came after me like that.
Yeah.
And I actually tried to confront it when I was there, not in a bad way, but like, you know, why did you do this to me? You know, I didn't do anything to you and blah, blah, blah. And that was it for me. I was instantly hooked because going in there as a skeptic and leaving as a believer within a 4 or 5 hour period. I mean, that says a lot.
But what is going through your mind as you are being physically scratched? I mean, you have a physical attack that's happening to you. I think many would be like, I'm done. I believe, sure, but I'm not going to screw with this anymore, because if it can do this, what else can it do? I mean, what's going through your mind that makes you want to continue down that road, knowing that it can physically affect you in possibly a dangerous way?
Well, I can tell you that everybody on the show, including Dan, thought I was never going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very surprised at the way I handled it. I didn't freak out about it. I was more angry than anything. that, you know, it picked me to do this to. And it, like I said, it made me want to know more. It made me want to keep searching for what happens after we're no longer mm-hmm. on this plane of existence. And, you know, since then, you know, like I said, I've gotten to be part of things that, and I've even had more stuff happen to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, hearing EVPs, questions that I asked answered, just totally blew my mind. I could not believe that I didn't get into this sooner. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's an amazing field. I mean, for people out there who don't believe, I'm going to tell you, as somebody that was a skeptic and had that happen to me, there is no explanation for what happened to me. There was nobody behind me. The camera guy was on the other side of the room. The two girls we were filming were sitting on the floor in another part of the room. And there was nothing behind me that I backed into. I mean, it was a basement. Mm-hmm. And it just opened my eyes to a whole new realm of possibilities, you know, that there is more out there after you're gone. You just don't get put in the ground and that's it.
Do you feel like the other side can communicate with you specifically easier because of how close you came to death?
I think that I've been told that actually, but I've thought that on my own. The reason that I get scratched and I get touched a lot is because they know that I know that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to get my attention. I just wish, you know, maybe just a tap on the shoulder would be nice. But, you know, sometimes it's more than that. Just recently, one of the shows that I do for, I actually own a studio with Dan and another group called Awakened Paranormal. Mm-hmm. We kind of consolidated everybody into one group because we were all helping each other anyways. And Awakened Paranormal has a show called When Darkness Falls, which is going to be premiering on, I can never say the name of this place right, but it's the old Vitti space. What is it? Cusum or something like that it's called now.
Okay.
And we were doing the Pratt Opera House, and it's this opera house that was built around the time of the Civil War. And the psychic that we brought with us, Christy London, she was picking up on something. And then one of the investigators for their team, Kat McDonald, she's also an empath. And she was picking up on stuff, and I was picking up on stuff, and all three of us were spot on mm-hmm. to what we were picking up. So we were filming, and the way this place is set up, like the opera house is on the second floor, which was really strange for me to see something like that. But you'd have to look up the history of the building to see why it was like that. But we were down in where the gift shop was, and I was looking up towards the opera house with the camera, and all three of us were transfixed on this area. And I'm like, there is something standing up there. They're like, yeah, I know. And Christy said that it's the owner. He doesn't like us being there because we were told beforehand that the original owner of the building is very standoffish with paranormal investigators and doesn't like them being there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I got this overwhelming feeling of anger. Like, not that I was angry, but he was ticked off.
Yeah.
And I started to get a little standoffish with him. And the next thing I know, something blasted me in the chest. I can't even explain what the feeling was like. It wasn't like something was trying to grab my heart and squeeze it or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it was like getting, I'll compare it to getting checked in hockey.
Okay.
It hit me so hard that it almost knocked me off my feet. And I was holding the camera, and it's not a cheap camera. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I wanted to do was drop this camera.
Sure.
So somebody luckily was standing next to me, grabbed the camera. I got so winded that I started gasping for air, and I had to hold on to something to stand up, and they made me sit down, and I started to feel really sick and nauseous afterwards. And, you know, not being able to breathe was kind of freaking me out too. And, you know, throughout the investigation, Christy's just like, you shouldn't have been so standoffish with him. You made him mad and he came after you. Mm-hmm. And he made his anger known to me by doing what he did to me. And I've never felt anything like that in my life. It was just, it's hard to describe. I mean, I wish I could describe it to people so they could understand what it was like. It was more than just being pushed by something.
Yeah.
There was more feeling to it than that. It was the physical aspect of it, and it was the emotional aspect of it. And just that kind of anger and hate being pushed on you was just, it still blows my mind to think about it.
Do you ever fear anything like that when you can sense like this is angry, this is hateful, this is not just something that you're bumping into and kind of crossing paths with? Do you ever fear like what potential does it have to affect you?
Yeah, I do actually. And actually transitioning over to Hinsdale now, the first time I went up to Hinsdale, I heard all kinds of stories about it when Dan first bought the property. And it was my first time going up there. And my big thing is I wanted to film a documentary on the place, because being a filmmaker, documentaries and stuff like that is, I love it. And so I was going up there to get some B-roll, and it just happened to be that he was having a rehabilitation day up there where people were volunteering their time to help fix up the house. Cause it was in, when he first bought the house, I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of it. It was in bad disrepair. I mean, it needed a new roof, and, you know, there were holes in the walls on the inside, and there was backside of the house. Part of it was ripped off, and there was about 500,000 honeybees in the wall. So the house was in real bad shape. So when we were driving down the road to go to this place, and if you ever get the chance to go there, I'm going to say go there, because it can't be more cliche than any other horror movie that you've ever seen, because it's literally at the end of a dead end road.
Sure.
Yeah. In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And pulling up to this place, you know, I started to get a weird feeling. I got out of the car, and the only way I can explain it was like I just got hit with all this negative energy, mm-hmm. just plowed right into me. And I was taken back from it. I'm like, do I really want to go here? You know, and just feeling all that negativity and everything. And then I was actually able, I had a brand new camera I just bought. And I was going around, I was taking pictures, and I caught some really cool stuff that is actually on the Hinsdale Facebook page. But one of the things that gets me the most is, like I said, this was a brand new camera. There was nothing wrong with the camera. I walked inside the house. Now, nobody has ever been allowed to smoke in the house. Mm-hmm. So I walked in the house, and I started taking interior pictures. Well, out of all the pictures, two of the pictures didn't come out. And if you look at the pictures, again, these are posted on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. If you go to the Hinsdale House Restoration Project, Hinsdale page, the pictures are on there. And it looks like somebody was smoking in the room. But if you look closely, you can make out figures in the smoke.
Really?
And a lot of people have told me it looks like there's an Indian guy standing there, which the property is very famous for its Indian backstory.
Yeah.
And all the Indian activity that goes out there, and, you know, stuff that's been found out there. And it was incredible. And ever since then, you know, I've been up there. I spent a lot of time up there, probably more than a normal person should. And I'm obsessed with the place. It's a beautiful piece of property. Mm-hmm. Like I said, though, it is in the middle of nowhere. There's a pond out there. And my big thing is being a diver is I wanted to dive the pond and see, because there's stories of a woman that walks around the pond in a white dress. And I wanted to see if they found anything, if we could find anything. And unfortunately, there was another event that was going on that was already being done, so I couldn't do it, which I think is going to be coming out soon on Travel Channel. It's a Nick Groff show. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to say too much because I don't know how much I'm supposed to say. So
no, I get it.
Just keep an eye out for that. But they did a full depth investigate everything that I told Dan I wanted to do. They actually did. Mm-hmm. Even coming down to the ground penetrating radar, I wanted to do that on the property because I could just feel it. There was more there than meets the eye. And Dan's really done a great job fixing up the property. It has really, really become a really nice place. And he has people coming in from all over the world to investigate this little piece of property in the middle of nowhere. And I think that's pretty incredible.
It is.
And, you know, now with the restoration going on, he's building a base camp out there. They're putting in a new shed. They just put in stairs that lead up into the woods. So you don't have to do the slide of shame, I call it, because I have done it, coming down that hill when it's wet and it's basically like a mudslide. So, you know, and fixing up the interior of the house, I mean, it looks nothing like it did when he first bought it. And, you know, there's been stuff that's been found, again, stuff I can't talk about, but it's going to come out. And it really leads the investigation of the property in a whole nother direction.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Kevin Schmitz about being followed by the dead. A big thank you to him for joining us in the program and sharing his experiences with us. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support and thanks for listening to The Grave Talks.